You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today will be my usual Friday show, but it won't be a long one. I decided to really wrap up the week with what's happening in Baltimore. I hadn't planned to be doing a show in Baltimore today, but as you're probably well aware, this morning the police officers that were involved in the arrest and the transport of a prisoner that ultimately died, Freddie Gray, were charged, which means they were arrested, put in jail, and if they can't raise bail, are going to spend some time in jail. Now, I'm a little bit surprised for a number of reasons. I thought this was an attempt to stop any further violence in Baltimore. They were afraid, I think that the district attorney was afraid, as well as the powers that be in Baltimore, that if they quickly did not charge these officers, that we could have a continuation of what went on the entire week. And they might very well be right. And we're hearing the phrase, rush to judgment. I'm certainly not in a position to either agree or not to agree with that statement. I will say I was a little bit surprised. I understand they were investigating this, so it's not like they were waiting to get the medical examiner's report as well as the police own investigation before pursuing it. But I thought they would wait at least a week or two, maybe even longer, to develop any facts that they needed to develop. So I got the impression that, rightly or wrongly, and so are other people commenting upon this, this is very much a rush to charge, not so much judge, because all it is a charge. Serious charges, but a charge. Anyone can sue anyone else, and yes, the DA can either charge you or go to the grand jury and get an indictment. But that's only really the beginning of the process, the early stages of the process. For the simple reason, everyone is entitled to their day in court, to tell their side of the story, and that will happen. Now, if you ask me what do I think is going to ultimately happen right now, as of this point in time, I think ultimately the officers are not going to be found guilty. Let me say that again, are not going to be found guilty of the charges. And I say that because my impression, and I'm not an attorney and not involved in the case in any way, but district attorneys can and often do overcharge. In other words, you may be guilty of a lesser charge, but they go for the more serious charge in an effort to make you plea out. And that is unfortunately done more times than it should be. I was a little surprised that all six officers were charged. And it seems there are two key facts here that are going to be in dispute. One is the contention that the district attorney is saying that they did not have probable cause for an arrest. Point one. Point two is they did not follow police procedures in putting a seat belt on the prisoner that they were transporting to the police station. Now, let's address each one of these. First, with they did not have probable cause to make an arrest. What do we know about the suspect? He has been repeatedly arrested as a drug dealer and known in the community for that. And you better believe that not all the police officers, but many of the police officers that patrol that area knew who he was. I don't know for a fact whether the police officers that first came upon him that were riding bicycles knew of his past history. Supposedly, eye contact was made. They went up to him to ask him some questions, which is perfectly in their right to do, the police officers. It's done every day. A lot of you have experience with it when you're driving a car and you're pulled over. And they will ask you some questions, like, can I see your driver's license, your registration, your insurance? And you probably ask the question, what's the problem, officer? And usually you'll find out real quickly, well, this is a 40-mile zone and you're going 65. Or you're driving without a seatbelt. So police officers can stop you and ask you questions. And if you're smart, you're respectful and ask a few questions yourself. And sometimes if you're courteous, show the proper respect, that'll be the end of it. You might beat a ticket. Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. It really depends on the police officer and also how you handle the situation. Obviously, you give the police officer a hard time or act in a way to assault the person, you could face not only a traffic ticket, but some time in jail. And that's important to say. It's how you respond to when the police officers, if you will, confront you. How did Freddie Gray respond? He ran. Now, he's entitled to run, but what do you think the police officers did? They chased him. Now, why would they chase him? Now, I don't know this for a fact. That's why there's a lot of information that the district attorney is simply not telling the public, and that's true in terms of the police department. But here's something you need to understand. If one of those officers or both understood Freddie Gray's history, that he had in the past been dealing drugs, they strongly would suspect that he may have drugs and or cash on him, and that's why he ran. In other words, Freddie didn't want to be searched. And what happens when someone does that, and I've seen videos that are on YouTube of chases like this, the person has either drugs or money, a large quantity of money on them that they truly can't explain. And if you search their pockets, you might have residue of drugs. And that might very well have been going through the minds of the officers that first approached Freddie Gray, who's now dead. They wanted to ask him one or more questions. And before they had the opportunity to do that, he took off. Now, they found, once they captured him, caught up with him, and there were a number of officers in pursuit, they did find a knife. Now, the district attorney is making a big deal of the fact that this knife is not illegal in Baltimore. Now, that doesn't surprise me, because a lot of people that carry a knife are carrying a pen knife. They're not carrying an illegal weapon such as a switchblade, which may be legal depending on the length of the blade. It depends, again, on where you're at. So there's a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of evidence that needs to be brought forward, and it will be brought forward in a trial. What I think the district attorney is trying to do is to first overcharge him with the hope that one or more of the officers will plead out. I think she's dreaming, but it could happen. It depends on the attorneys that these officers have and how aggressive they are. There are some defense attorneys that will recommend you plea out to a lesser charge. I would not recommend it for these officers. You know, if you're innocent, you don't plea out. And I think three or four of these officers fall in that category. There are judgment calls that need to be made. And when the person, let's assume for a minute that Freddie was taken to the station, they reviewed, and they're going to have to review the situation with their sergeant or the lieutenant in charge. And they might very well had the officer in charge say, we don't have enough, we're going to let you go. But next time when we stop you, don't run away. That could have very well happened, and if it did, Freddie Gray would be alive today. You see, everybody's a human being, and everybody makes mistakes. Freddie made the mistake of running. Had he not ran, assuming he didn't have any drugs or a lot of cash on him, he might very well be alive today. I have on occasion been stopped by police officers, mainly for traffic violations. Not that many. I haven't had one in several years, but my point is, it could happen to you or anyone else today, driving home. I've said this more than once on previous shows. I live in a neighborhood that routinely, whether I'm going to the Richland College or coming from Richland College to my apartment. I see at least once, and usually I see at least one and usually two or three police squad cars. Now I know why. The police department, the Dallas Police Department, has a speed trap right off the highway. So usually the cars that are pulled over are being pulled over for speeding. And they try to run away. Some just pull over into a gas station. And I would say 9 times out of 10, that's what's going on. Not all the time, but most of the time. It's routine traffic violations, or people don't have a current sticker. But it's not all the time. Because sometimes what you and I would consider a routine stop turns into something a lot more serious. If the person, for example, has warrants out for his arrest, or he knows he's carrying a weapon or has illegal drugs on him, there's a great temptation, just like what Freddie did, is to try to outrun the cops, which is rather difficult because they have radios. And if you're in an area like I am, which is well patrolled, your chances are slim and none. And the officers have a difficult job. They do not know when they walk up to you what they're dealing with. And that's important to understand. And it also depends on the time of day. I can vividly recall one time, and this is a similar situation, where I was parked on the street and there were bicycle patrol. And they just wanted to, I think, identify who I was. So they asked me for my ID. But before they did, they said, please keep your hands on the steering wheel. Now, I don't carry a weapon, but I understand their concern. And that's what you need to understand. Policemen every day run the risk of being shot and killed. And we have a lot of bad people out there that would think nothing of killing them. It's not a job I would want, and it's a very difficult job. And how did this start out? You had two police officers. One was a lieutenant. They were both riding bicycles. And that's fairly common, even in Dallas. Not as common as maybe some cities, but I've seen it in areas, and I've talked to the officers, and they say, well, we pick a neighborhood, and it's usually in the evening. Now, sometimes it's in the day, but usually it's in the evening. They're just pedaling along, seeing whether or not, especially if it's a residential or apartment area, people might be breaking in, especially if there's a history of that. And that's what they do, and they're moved from neighborhood to neighborhood to neighborhood. So we've had six officers that have been charged, police officers. The most serious charge is the driver of the police van that was transporting Freddie Gray from the place he was arrested at to the police station. And along the way, they made several stops. One was to pick up another person that they put in the van. But in one stop, they had to the driver put chains or shackles on the feet of Freddie. Twice when they stopped, Freddie was talking. And this is based on testimony. It was only when they got to the police station that they found that the term is non-responsive. He was unconscious. And they quickly called an ambulance and took him to the hospital, or the ambulance did. Now, there are a lot of people that have theories. The blacks in the neighborhood want to blame the police. The police did this to him. They roughed him up. The driver was driving erratically. This is their view. I don't know. As a result, Freddie was being banged up against the wall and the floor of the police van. Here's the problem. There is no video of this. There are really no witnesses except for the second person that was picked up. And he said he heard, because there was a divider between them, that Freddie was being banged up against the wall. Now, the district attorney is making a big deal, and she repeated this several times during her press conference, that they weren't following police procedures, department procedures. Namely, if you're put in one of these police vans, you need to be put in a seatbelt. In other words, they need to lock you in a seatbelt. Now, what she didn't tell you is this was a rather new policy, effective 1 April. And the way they made officers aware of it is to send them an email. So it was a brand new policy. Prior to that, it was optional. You either could put a seatbelt on them or you couldn't. And what police officers would tell you, many times the people they're arresting that are already in handcuffs will spit on them, bite them, in other words, put up some more resistance. So on many occasions, they simply don't bother putting them in seatbelts. There's a seat with seatbelts, but they don't lock them in. And you need to understand this trip to the police station where they would book him. It's less than an hour drive. It's not a long drive. And this police van obviously was on call because they picked up another person that they detained and put in the van. So the driver is the one that's getting the more serious crime, a second-degree homicide, with a depraved heart, which means usually with first-degree and second-degree, you have to prove intent. And here's where I think the district attorney is going to have some problems. The reason they charged him with that is if he willfully did not render a medical assistance when Freddie asked for it, and he did ask for it in the van, that can be construed as harming that individual. And I'll be the first one to say, if you're arrested and you're healthy from the start, and that's a big assumption, I'll get back to that in a minute, you should not be expected to be seriously injured no matter how you're transported to the police station. This should not happen. Does it happen? Yes, you better believe it does happen. But here's the big point. You got to prove it in court. Like I said, anyone can sue. Any district attorney can charge you or get an indictment, but you're going to have to prove your case. And this district attorney is not going to have to prove her case. Someone in her office is. And what will probably happen down the road is these charges will be reduced. And I think for several of the officers, they will be dismissed. For one reason, they don't have the evidence. You got to prove it. And you better believe the defense attorneys will be going after the evidence that the district attorney produces. Because intention is rather key here. I've seen the video where he was arrested that someone took. They weren't pounding him in the head or the neck. You had two police officers, had him by the arm either side, and they had to literally drag him to the police van and put him in the van. And two of those officers were charged. So where the defense will really go after is, and they have to do this, and will do this, whether or not they're successful, I don't know. The contention of the district attorney is he never should have been arrested. They did not have probable cause for an arrest. Well, that's her opinion. That is her opinion. She's going to have to prove it, as will the defense have to prove that they did have probable cause. And the probable cause is fairly straightforward. He'll have and will introduce the record, the criminal record of Freddie Gray, what his past arrests were for, and the details of it, and then the fact that one or both officers that were on this bike patrol knew that Freddie was a drug dealer. And they wanted to ask him some questions, which there is their right. But before they could, Freddie ran away. And that's when they called for assistance, and that's when they got on their bicycles and chased after him and ultimately captured him. There's something else that has to be considered. When did Freddie get his supposedly 80% severed spinal column? When did that injury occur? Everyone is assuming it's in the van, but that's an assumption. He could have been injured before any of this happened. We don't know. Because there have been people that are in automobile accidents and talk to surgeons or physicians that have this serious spinal column injury but don't know it. But subsequently, because of pain, they get checked out and then it's discovered they have a serious injury. This could have happened to Freddie prior to any of this happening. Also, he could have gotten this injury when the police officers on bikes try to stop him. Remember, he was running away, so they're going to have to wrestle him to the ground, which they did. And you got the impression, listening to this video that captured this, that he might have injured his leg. Who knows? You see, evidence is key here, and that's the point. Evidence. Not speculation, and really, in this case, it's not going to be testimony. It's going to be what the medical examiner's report says, and he ruled it a homicide. That wasn't murder. You got to distinguish between homicide and murder. It's clear that Freddie Gray died of a serious injury. But the question is exactly where and when that injury occurred, and who, if anyone, caused it. Was it Freddie? Was it someone else? Was it a police officer? I don't think there are very many people that truly know the answer. That's why you're getting people on both sides of this. I make no pretense at having any knowledge as to who is guilty and who is not in this situation. That's why I think these police officers will walk if they put up a strong defense. Because the district attorney can make as many statements to the press as she wants. But the proof's in the pudding, and you're going to have to prove it in court, where you have a jury, a judge, and witnesses and statements. And I don't think it's going to be easy. And I think what's going to become readily apparent, that with the possible exception of the driver, the other officers, who I think were overcharged, it'll be thrown out for lack of evidence. And I'm sure the defense is going to move for that. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to get it. And the other thing is, this trial will not take place in Baltimore. The defense will ask for a change of venue. In other words, it will be tried outside of Baltimore to get a fair jury. And I don't know how the district attorney, defense is going to handle it. I think what the district attorney is trying to do is to see if she can get one or more of the officers, grant them immunity, which means they have to testify. Now, if she does this, here's the problem. What they're betting on is one of the police officers knows something and will testify to it. That's making a rather critical assumption, that they're guilty of something and one is in a position to get out of it and will take that opportunity and either tell the truth or lie. I don't think you're going to see that. I really don't. I think these six defendants, officers, will put up a united front, and like I said, ultimately be found not guilty. And when that happens, I think Baltimore will blow up again. It's clear to me that the mayor, as well as the district attorney, are using this situation to play politics or further their political careers. I think the mayor is in serious trouble. Just listen to the last show. Because I know if I were an owner of a business that got burnt out or looted in Baltimore, I would not be happy with this mayor. You see, the impression outsiders are getting is this mayor is siding with Freddie Gray. And the police officers, that's what they feel. Call it being thrown under the bus. The assumption is you're guilty until you can prove your innocence. And I think they jumped the gun. And they handle it rather poorly. The phrase was a space to destroy. I think that will be a phrase that will go down in history. Because the gangs, the thugs, yes, thugs, they found a space to destroy. They were throwing bricks, rocks at police officers, smashing cars, both police cars and cars of citizens of Baltimore, throwing rocks into the windows of businesses, restaurants. In other words, they were engaged in criminal activity, but the police were told to stand down, back up. And that has become common knowledge in Baltimore. There's a big morale problem, I believe, in the police department of Baltimore. They don't like the way this mayor and police commissioner have treated the rank and file. And if you want to side with the criminals, you're welcome. Now, that doesn't mean criminals are should be targets for police officers to attack. But if you're going to make that charge, and that is the charge that this district attorney is making, you got to prove it. That's the way the system works. Now, what's key is who is going to be the defense attorneys and what is the evidence they have. Is it an accident? No, the medical examiner says this is no accident. This was intentional and it was homicide. Prove it. Who committed the homicide? They're saying it's the driver of the police van. I want to put you in his shoes for a minute. Your job every day is to drive this police van and you're picking up people that have been arrested. Some are quiet and orderly, but many aren't. Many are on drugs. And it reminds me, I was leaving to come to Richland College, and I wanted to drop by my mailbox and pick up my mail. And I park right on the side of where the apartment mailboxes is. Now, I was making that turn, a black lady that I think was high, either drunk or high on drugs. I didn't run her over, but I nearly did. The lady was loopy, and she was heading in the opposite direction from the turn and was waving. She looked like a prostitute. Let me say this. I'll add that. Well, I was interested in picking up my mail and getting to Richland College. So I stopped, and this lady continued. I really don't even know where she disappeared to. But it could have been a confrontation. I wasn't looking for a confrontation. Now, I'm bringing this up for a reason. If you're driving that van, you're going to be picking up people that are sober, but they've committed some crime and are in handcuffs. You're also going to pick up people that are drunk or on drugs, and you can tell. And some will be semi-rational, and others will be violent. That's your job. That's what you get paid for. And you do it. Now, it's a job I would not want. Now, if you get out of line and try to injure people, let me tell you what will happen. You're not going to have that job very long. The reason's very simple. People will be complaining, and it will get noticed. You see, this is some of the evidence that the district attorney is going to be bringing up. Again, I don't know the record of this police officer that drives this van. I don't know the records of the other five officers. But that's all relevant, and you got to make a judgment call. You can't think about it for a day or two. And the time compression is important. You got to make decisions fast. And sometimes you're right, and hopefully many times you're right, but sometimes you're wrong. And you have lawyers that are second guessing what the police are doing. I think the district attorney made a mistake by overcharging, and I think they're definitely overcharging, thinking that they can get one or more of the officers to either plead out or rat on the other officers. But that is assuming there's something to rat about. They call it prisoner's dilemma, where you have two people arrested, and it's a dilemma. If you both keep your mouth shut, you'll both go free. But if one of you opens your mouth and accuses the other, you might go free, but the other person will be doing the time and punishment for it. And that's what district attorneys count on. So we'll see. I think you're talking months. We're months away for impaneling a jury, and this goes to trial. And remember, the district attorney is going to have to disclose her evidence. And in the meanwhile, what's happening? The Department of Justice is going to be doing their separate investigation. What I see happening in Baltimore is the police department has very much been politicized, and they have a problem. They could go down the road to Detroit. Remember, this city is very much a Democratic city, a blue city, controlled by the Democratic Party. It's really a single-party city. It's predominantly black. I'm not sure the exact percentage, but I heard it's over 60%, or about two-thirds. So most of the key positions, not all, you have black mayor, in this case, a woman, and a black district attorney. I don't think that's really, shouldn't be that relevant. That's the problem. It's become relevant. Now, I want to connect it to something, because something has been gnawing at me. And I do listen to talk radio, and a number of people were calling in and reminding me, as well as other people, of a campaign promise of Barack Obama. Now, before I tell you what that campaign promise was, or what he was running on, something triggered not only in me, but the people listening, that brought this back. Al Sharpton, Reverend Rat Al Sharpton, is on the scene, and he was supposedly called in at the request of this mayor. I don't know why. Well, I know why he's on the scene. He's always looking for money for his organization, and really for him. And he owes millions in taxes, by the way. He's what's called an outside agitator. Frankly, he is the last person any mayor should call in to come to their city. But the mayor decided to do it, and Reverend Rat's on the case. He's not a positive force. He's not meant to be a positive force. He's a troublemaker. You know, trouble is his middle name. And he's trying to divide blacks and whites and create tension between blacks and whites, and trying to give a false narrative, really propaganda, that it's whites that are the problem in terms of the police force. Police are the problem. What's the problem in Baltimore and some of our major cities today? Blacks know this. Whites know this. And I went into it on my last show. It's black-on-black crime. That's the number one problem. You have young black, predominantly males, preying on their own community. And additionally, depending on the crime category, whether it's homicide, rape, assault, burglary, robbery, in terms of the percentage of blacks in the population, the rates of homicide, rape, burglary are usually several times their percentage of the population. In other words, blacks are committing a disproportionate amount of the crime relative to the percentage of the population. But the key thing, in category after category, over 90% of that crime, the victim, the person that gets hurt or robbed or injured or shot dead, are other blacks. The problem is not whites going into black communities committing crimes. In other words, it's black people preying and killing other black people. And the black communities know this. They know it. The churches know it. And the people that are involved with their community know it. And the only ones, not the only ones, but the who do they call when they have a problem? Usually it's the police. And it's just the facts of life. If you're a police officer today, they are going to send you to those neighborhoods where the crime is. They're not going to send you to the neighborhoods where there's little or no crime because you want to allocate your scarce resources. And that means you will be patrolling in areas that are high crime and usually poor areas, including Baltimore, like the police officers on these bikes were doing. And look who they ran into. Someone with a very long rap sheet, and when they approached him to ask the question, he ran. Yet who are the powers that be defending? Yep, the drug dealer. You see, you have a problem in Baltimore. People are moving out of Baltimore. And before long, it will be like Detroit. Just a matter of time, and what happened in the last week in Baltimore will be just another reason why a lot of people, black and white, decide, I'm out of here. And that is unfortunate. But that is a rational response. And many whites and blacks do it. It's called white flight as well as black flight. And when it gets worse and worse and worse, it's usually the gangs, the drug dealers that are causing the problem and make it worse for everybody in the community. It goes down and down and downhill. Now, Reverend Rat is now in Baltimore, or last time I checked. I don't know if he went home for the weekend. Supposedly, he's going to lead a march from Baltimore to Washington. Good luck, Reverend Al. But he mentioned something that caught my attention and a lot of people's attention. He said, what we need to do is for the Department of Justice to take over these police departments, nationalize these police departments. Now, that's a curious idea coming from Reverend Al, or Reverend Rat, but it kept bouncing around my head. Where have I heard this before? And I had heard something similar out of President Barack Obama. When he was running, and I need to say this before I go on, the way you listen to this show is to go to Pronk Pops, that's PronkPops .wordpress.com. PronkPops.wordpress.com. And if you do, you'll see at the very top my photograph of yours truly in the studio, but right below it, you'll have links to my last 60 to 80 shows. But below that, you will have some of my preparation for the show in terms of either newspaper articles, photographs, videos, some of the information that I looked at preparing the show. And I knew I had heard this, and I did find it. It wasn't that hard to find. President Obama, when he was running for president, this is in 2008, and you haven't heard that much lately about it, although there is a little bit. He wanted to have, he called it a civilian security force, like our military, but a national civilian security force. It sort of faded from memory. Even in the campaign, he mentioned this and then suddenly dropped it. I think he dropped it because alarm bells were ringing, and they probably focus tested it, and they dropped it from the campaign. That is my suspicion. I don't know. I wasn't part of the campaign. But it suddenly disappeared, and you really haven't heard much of it. That doesn't mean they haven't been doing anything on it, but it hasn't been, let's say, flushed out. He's had a a lot on his plate. He's been busy. It hasn't worked out too good, either in terms of economic policy or foreign policy. But suddenly, the idea of a national police force went away. I think it's back. I really do think it's back. And why do I say that? Who is Al Sharpton? Why has he been in the White House dozens of times? He is one of the leading, not the only, but one of the leading propagandists for Barack Obama. And he is on the case trying to stir up, agitate, and try to promote the false narrative that we have police departments all across this nation that are killing blacks, that are being aggressive towards blacks. And this needs to stop, and we're going to stop it. The problem is they haven't been very successful proving it. Like I said, anyone can sue anyone, can accuse a person of something, but you got to prove it. You got to make your case. And even with the media, the Democratic Party media, CBS, ABC, NBC, behind Obama, in other words, they had the advantage of the media being on their side, they really have not been successful doing this. And the reason is simple. It's a lie. Like much propaganda, it's a big lie. And they've tried this several times, and it hasn't worked. So Reverend Ratt is really a mouthpiece for what President Obama wants. So suddenly, when he mentions nationalizing police departments across this land, my ears picked up. Why? Because law enforcement is first and foremost a state matter and a local matter. It's not the responsibility of the federal government. And as far as I'm concerned, it never will. And there will be a lot of pushback if President Obama even tried to do this. And I think he's trying. And that's what one of the things that now departed Attorney General Holder was working on. What they do is they go after police departments such as Ferguson. And remember, the officer was totally cleared by the Department of Justice, yet they went after the police department. Some would say they had a case. Some would say, including me, they didn't. And they try to force those police departments into agreeing to do certain things. And if you don't agree, it forces the department into litigation with the Department of Justice. So with Eric Holder gone and the fact that the president's time remaining in office is short, I don't think the idea of a national police department is going to go anywhere. I think it's a bad idea whose time will never come. And the reason is very simple, and I want to be careful here. The American people know a little bit about history. And they know what happened in the 1930s in Germany with the National Socialist German Worker Party. You know them as the Nazis. They had a national police force, the Gestapo. And that's what many Americans identify a so-called national police. They don't want that at all. They don't want the federal government to take over your local sheriff's department, city police forces, at all. And many departments deeply resent the feds, including the FBI. I think what ultimately Eric Holder, as well as Obama, although they really wanted this idea, knew it would meet a lot of resistance. And frankly, I don't think it has a prayer of succeeding, because the states as well as cities would fight back. Oh, you could get Baltimore to go along with it and some of the cities that the Democratic Party more or less controls. In other words, they have a single party ruling. But it won't work where you have very much two competitive parties and where you have the people want nothing to do with the concept of a national police force. But I think that is one of the reasons they send out Reverend Ratt. And I call him Reverend Ratt because he's a rat. He's an informer, but he's someone that should have been sent to jail a long time ago. I'm amazed he wasn't. He's not respected in New York, and I'm not going to use this show to go over his history, but it's not one to be proud of. And the fact that the president even associates with him and uses him to be a mouthpiece speaks volumes about President Obama. Remember, he likes to be called a community organizer. You see, they used to call community organizers communist agitators, but they changed the name to community organizer. Doesn't it sound nice? community organizer. Do they really organize? Not really. What they do is they do get groups of people to picket businesses, banks. You see, birds of a feather flock together. That's what Reverend Ratt does, as well as Jesse Jackson. They're shakedown artists. They're trying to get money, extort money, out of businesses, banks, financial institutions, Hollywood movie studios. It's agitation. And some pay up, and some tell them, take a walk. Some call it extortion. And if you're foolish to pay extortion, just like blackmail, they come back and back and back. And that is Reverend Ratt, and that's why he's in Baltimore. So listen closely as to what Reverend Ratt is saying. He gets his marching orders from Barack Obama. And that is what has been happening in the last several years in various cases. The one previous was in Ferguson. He's an agitator. He wants to stir up trouble. And give him his due, he's been successful at it. Now, he's not alone. There are also people that are troublemakers. They're the outsiders that come in and try to provoke violent responses. And many of them just do get arrested. So there's something bigger going on in Baltimore that really deserves our attention. And I don't know if the district attorney was rushing to judgment, but she's going to have to prove her case or have the people working for her prove her case. My own suspicion is the leadership in Baltimore finally woke up to the fact that this could easily get out of hand and we would have Baltimore burning. And that is not good for Baltimore. In other words, they panicked because of their incompetent handling of what was happening in Baltimore. They panicked. They knew they were over their heads. They invited the last person in the world they should invite, Al Sharpton. And now we have a continuation of the marches. Supposedly there's going to be a march from Baltimore to Washington. Let them march. I have no problem. You want to exercise your First Amendment rights, go right ahead. But there's a lesson that these people better learn. You might get away with this in a state or a city where you have one-party rule, but you're not going to get away with this in other cities where you have two parties contending or more, and where people believe in their Second Amendment rights as well as their First Amendment rights, and they're not going to let outside agitators, community organizers, come into their community and try to run roughshod over the police and the businesses and the people in that community. In other words, they will defend their community against outside agitators, no matter where they're from. In other words, there will be pushback. You haven't seen it yet. But there will be. And that could be a very dangerous situation for everybody. But we're not going to play dead. Roll over and play dead. In other words, you're not going to be able to push around the American people. And you will not be successful in trying to take over or control the police departments of the United States. It will be exposed. It will be resisted. And that will be at least one area that Barack Obama tried and failed. There are others. He has a disastrous economic policy as well as foreign policy. And hopefully this will be my last show on Baltimore. I'm sure somewhere in the next 6 months or a year, I'll be talking a little bit more about it. So stay tuned, and more is coming out, and I expect a lot more will be coming out as to what truly is happening in Baltimore. People talk because a lot of people are law-abiding and they don't want the criminals in their community. They don't want evil in their community and they don't appreciate the leadership, whether it's the mayor or the district attorney or the police commissioner, siding with the people that are doing the rioting, the looting, the burning. Oh, you can take their side, but you're literally destroying your own community. Not very smart, not very intelligent. And if you don't watch out, Baltimore might be burning. So I wish the people of Baltimore the best, but you need to do a lot of soul searching. And it gets back to the fact you need a strong families. Communities are strong where you have a mother and the father, in other words, a two-parent families, and where you have over 70% of the so-called families being a single parent, you tend to have two things, poverty and crime. So you have to address basic issues and not try to peddle the false narrative that is a police problem and whites are the problem. Oh yeah, there are a few bad cops. I know that. I've had some experience with at least one. But there are also a lot of good cops that are doing a very difficult job. So I wish the people of Baltimore well, but I think you need a change of leadership, starting with the mayor. With that, I'll play my favorite song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.